Hey, Griot fam. Welcome to Dear Culture, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I'm your co-host, Shauna Pinnock, social media director at The Griot.
And I'm your co-host, Jaron Keith Gaynor, managing editor at TheGriot.com.
And as we all know, this country has been preparing and stressing for today, Tuesday, November 3rd, also known as Election Day. So today's episode of Dear Culture will be focused on presidential predictions and exploration of what we have to lose or gain.
That's right, Griot fam. To offer up their political expertise on how voters can prepare for this unprecedented election, Dear Culture will be specially co-hosted by Dr. Christina Greer and Dr. Jason Johnson.
The election don't really start, right, until some state flips. And as of right now, we only have one state that may have flipped, only one.
Hey, Griot family, I'm Christina Greer, I'm a professor of political science at Fordham University, and I'm the politics editor at The Griot. My co-host here tonight is...
Dr. Jason Johnson. I'm a professor of politics and journalism at Morgan State University and a political contributor here at The Griot.
And this week we're asking, why don't we have election results yet? Okay, Jason Johnson, thank you so much for joining me for another episode of Dear Culture Podcast. So we're asking this week, why don't we have election results? Many people are accustomed to having an election night, and before they go to sleep, they have a president-elect, and whether they're happy or not, they rest easy, and the next morning they wake up and figure out whether or not they're going to celebrate or strategize. That's clearly not going to be the case this year. Many of us predicted that that would be so. What are you keeping your eye on in the next few days or hours or weeks, whatever it may be? What's most interesting to you? Because I got some thoughts.
This is what makes me laugh, right? It's like, who are these mystery people that thought we were going to know? We've been spending months saying you ain't going to know on election night. And the moment the first results come in, everybody starts freaking out. Every single thing
this
that has happened.
This country is filled with chicken littles. The sky is falling. Have you not been listening? What in the world?
No. It's like, it's funny. It's like somebody tells you, it's like, okay, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's going to be a really long line at this restaurant pre-COVID. It's going to be a long line at this restaurant. You're like, okay, I'm good. No, for real. There's a long line at the restaurant. Okay. And you get to the restaurant and there's a line. Can't believe there's a line.
Hey, bro, I don't believe it.
I'm so tired of this line. Like, why I gotta wait? That is what's happening. So I don't know why anyone thought we would know this sort of thing now. They must have been paying attention.
Why are you talking about Bill Cosby and jello pudding?
Because I got the pudding right now for the dinner, and I don't understand with my sweaters.
Right. So, okay, let's walk state by state, okay? Let's start at the state that we want to cut off with a pair of scissors. Let's start with Florida. I never even factor Florida into my electoral calculus because... Mm-hmm. They are consistently unreliable. So yes. When I'm looking at the golden number, for those of you who've been paying attention, the magic number is 270, right? A candidate has to get over 270 electoral college votes. So I never even factor in Florida because I'm just like, if I want the Democrat to win, it's like, let's figure out a path without it. Let's do the Obama model of 2008. Let's get the path. And if Florida needs to be tied up in the courts like it was in 2000, so be it. But we can still claim victory and not even worry about this. What are you feeling about Florida this year? We know that, you know, the Miami-Dade to Broward County, per usual, lots of drama. What's going on?
So I think there's two things about Florida that are worth paying attention to. Number one, even beforehand, I'm like you, Dr. Greer. I never really considered, I didn't think Biden was going to win Florida, in part because no matter what the poll numbers say in Florida, there's always a 3-5% suppression charge, right? So you know voter suppression, you know DeSantis, you know the Republicans there who also appoint incompetent Democrats in order to manage certain polling places. So you knew, I never believed it. What I do think is important though, and I think Florida is a red state, and I think it's going to be a red state for a while for various reasons, is we have to, and this is a discussion that our colleague Natasha Alsford can talk about. This is a conversation I reached out to a mutual colleague of ours, Dr. Vittoria DeFrancesco Soto at UT Austin. We need to start disaggregating our conversations about Latinos.
Listen, especially in Florida.
Yes,
especially in Florida.
Because in Florida.
Cubans, Argentinians, Venezuelans are not Democrats, people.
No.
Not going to be. And everyone's like, well, the children are. Not really. Like, well, you know what also I find interesting is that, you know, if we looked at 2018, right, that was a thin margin. Andrew Gillum lost by roughly a percentage point. But again, the grift and the theft and the voter suppression, you know, and I think a lot of people were excited about the possibility of Florida because of that initiative that passed where formerly incarcerated individuals could get the franchise and they could get the right to vote back. But I saw that as white people whose children had been caught up in the heroin and sort of addiction crisis, which is now a crisis. It's been a crisis for black
people. It's a crisis because white people are dying.
For white folks. And I thought that was a motivating factor for some of those votes. And so because that went well, and then we see that they implement a poll tax in Florida because of that, right? But I didn't see that as an indicator that the state was going blue by any stretch of the imagination.
No,
I mean, yes, they have lots of substantive cities, but there's still far too many people who use Florida as their voting registration, even because they're snowbirds.
Right.
So they live in northern states, but they much prefer to register in Florida, because in New York and New Jersey, like, you know, it's blue. And so if you lean a little bit to the right, you might as well vote in Florida,
right,
because you're going to make a difference and get the type of president and Congress that you want.
And I had this conversation with some far left folks earlier today. It's like this argument, they're like, oh, well, you know, Biden, he could have invested more money. And they were talking about socialism, and socialism, you know, it messed him up with his Latinos and Ventura. Let's be clear. This was not a persuasion.
Bernie was going to do better?
Right. One, yeah, exactly. One, like Bernie would have done worse. But two, this was not a persuasion election. If you're the kind of person that can be convinced to not vote for Biden because you think he's a socialist, you were never going to vote for a Democrat anyway.
Cut it out.
Stop that nonsense.
Just cut it out.
That's like the people who are like, I can't vote for Joe Biden because they're going to defund the police. He picked a DA as his VP. If you think defund the police, you weren't going to vote Democrat anyway. So I think Florida is just a red state. People need to stop pretending it's something else. But I will say this, it is problematic and perhaps indicative of how far red that state has gone. I mean, remember, DeSantis, who's responsible for completely mismanaging COVID there, is actually more popular now than when he got elected. Two Democratic incumbents lost their seats in South Florida. Now, that's real. So that state is now blood red. And I don't know that that's something you can argue about, the incompetence of the Democratic Party there. You can argue about voter suppression, but that just might mean that Florida got a Florida. And that just may not be a state that's worth Democrats really investing their time in. I mean, they haven't won it that often. Obama won it by the
thin margins. And, you know, so it's like, listen, you know, I like to Teddy Pendergrass at any time. Let it go. Like, we got other fish to fry, right? I mean, DeSantis is the captain of incompetence, but hey, he brought football back and he doesn't make people wear a mask. They love him. Let's move slightly north to Georgia. We got two Senate races that most likely will go for a runoff. Don't even get me started on Matt Lieberman, who's still in the race, and just he and his father can just go sit down someplace. Weak Democrats. That's one. Two,
are
though.
Are they really Democrats? Are they really?
Are they
Democrats?
Really?
Sore loser.
They masquerade. Yeah. They're basically Floridians, exactly. Dressed up as Democrats. But we know the work that Stacey Abrams has done for over a decade, right?
Mm-hmm.
These chickens possibly are going to come home to roost. Even in the shadow of rampant voter suppression in Georgia, even with someone like Brian Kemp, who's the governor, who's working in lockstep with the Secretary of State to disenfranchise millions of Georgians, how are you feeling about Georgia as a red to purple-ish state, but it hasn't been blue since 1992 and Bill Clinton?
I didn't think Georgia was going to turn blue, and because I don't think they have the raw numbers. You still have too much voter suppression. It is a state, I will say this, and I don't know about you, Dr. Gregory, Mr. Grubb, but like, I know a lot of people who are from Georgia, and anecdotally, and I always hate saying this in political analysis, but anecdotes are reflective of sort of larger intensity.
Mm-hmm.
I can name three different people, including a couple, an LGBTQ couple from New York, who straight up drove or flew to Georgia to vote in this election because they didn't get their absentee ballots. Like, people were serious down there. The turnout was real. They did break some turnout numbers, right? But I always thought that it was going to be too difficult because of the amount of suppression, because of the difficulty, because of the lines in their face. And then you got Fulton County, which earlier today in the State Farm Arena, a pipe burst.
At 5:30 a.m.
by the way. 5:30 in the morning. And yet 14 hours later, you haven't fixed it. So now you can't count the ballots until Friday. Now, that could easily be 100,000 votes, and that could end up making a difference one way or another.
Yeah.
But it speaks to this sort of overall incompetence. And the longer that you take, the more shenanigans can occur and the more likely that they're going to be challenged. So I didn't see Georgia's highly likely, at least from the people who I spoke to down there. But again, when it comes to Warnock, you know, I think Warnock's
going to... Warnock is the black pastor from Ebenezer Church who is running for the Senate. But go ahead.
Yeah, I think Reverend Warnock is going to end up in a runoff. I don't know about Ossoff and Perdue. I mean, clearly Georgians are perfectly comfortable with a senator who wanted to profit off of COVID and use insider trading while people were dying in his state. But I definitely think that Warnock's going to make the runoff.
Well, it's interesting. Earlier this evening, I spoke to an NPR reporter who's embedded in Georgia, and I asked him about the 159 counties, sort of anything that was surprising, right? We know that Fulton County is a largely Democratic/Black county. We know that there's some shenanigans there. I mean, Board of Elections is like, we're going home. We'll start counting tomorrow, Thursday, Friday. I don't know. I'll holler at you.
They counted 12 ballots and were like, who's up for Zaxby's? And just
right.
Like, we're done.
Oppa dos. I want some fried alligator and a Greek salad. Oh my gosh, now I'm hungry. But I asked him about sort of, you know, Georgia's a pretty interesting state, and it's actually quite large.
Yeah.
With 159 counties. And he said that the early voting in the rural counties actually had pretty robust Republican turnout.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that in a lot of places, early voting tends to skew democratically, but he was finding that in Georgia, a lot of Republicans in these obscure counties, where it's a little difficult to vote, decided to take advantage of that. And so that definitely show us some red results where, you know, listen, if the state hasn't been blue since 1992, I'm not necessarily banking on it to be blue. I mean, this is why, you know, for some of these Democrats who are just in mass hysteria, I'm like, go to livingroomcandidate.org, look at the historical maps. You can see the maps of every 4 years, starting with 1952, and you can look at the Electoral College votes, you can look at the number of states they have. It's a beautifully drawn out map. It's red and blue. You can see the percent that people have won, the whole numbers, the whole nine. You can even see some old school ads. Okay, let's go.
I want to say this also for the fans, because obviously Dr. Greer is way more of a responsible grown-up professor than I am. I use Living Room Candidate because it's got campaign commercials. And it's really cool. So if you've never been to Living Room Candidate, it is certainly like it has every single campaign commercial for every single presidential election from 1952 on. It's a fascinating, like,
I use it in my classes all the time. I mean, moving from black and white to color commercials where all of a sudden they start using women, right? Mm-hmm. They have the famous 1964 LBJ.
The Daisy ad.
I mean, you've got people smoking cigarettes in ads. Yes. You've got the use of the word Negroes. I mean, it's fascinating. Okay, so let's move up north just a little bit more. Let's go to our friends, the Tar Heel State you know pretty well, North mm-hmm. Carolina. What yes. do you feel in North Carolina?
Oh,
I'm skipping over South Carolina because, listen, Lindsey Graham was going to win. We know Jane Harrison put up a great fight, but South Carolina is 26% African-American. I just did not see South Carolina, of all places, home of Dylann Roof. I did not see that switching to a black man. And I'm sorry, Tim Scott is not Jamie Harrison, and Jamie Harrison is not Tim Scott. So I'm skipping over there for the sake of time.
Yes.
But what are you thinking about North Carolina? What do you feel?
So
another battleground.
North Carolina is strange because it's connected to multiple things. So as of right now, Cunningham is behind like 1%, but he's actually running a little bit ahead of Biden, but you're still not done with the vote counts in Charlotte. And also, we cannot ignore this whole thing. And again, this is why I say any victory that Donald Trump proclaims is not legitimate. You have a federal judge who went to DeJoy, Postmaster General of the Post Office.
A black judge, by the by.
Black judge, and said, yo, you have 300,000 ballots that we know were certified and sent through the mail that have not yet been delivered to polling places. In fact, there's maps you can find online that show how many ballots are still out in post offices in particular states. And he's like, dude, it was your job to send your officials into all these processing centers and pull out these ballots by 3 o'clock on election day. And DeJoy didn't do it because he is a corrupt vote suppressing monster who's a part of the Trump administration. And there are ballots that are due in North Carolina. So whatever the small margins are, whether it's the Senate race or the presidential race, you've got 300,000 ballots that could be split, but they're split between Florida, Georgia, Arizona, and North Carolina. Those are the main places right now. So I don't know. Do I think North Carolina is going to go to Biden? I don't necessarily think so, but it's probably a lot closer than we give it credit for being right now. And given the fact that you've got an interesting situation where they easily reelected a Democratic governor, you've got a Democratic Senate candidate who's about 1% behind, and they're both slightly running ahead of Biden. So I don't know. They may drag him over the line when the vote is finally finished, and the vote is not finished yet.
Yeah, I worry about this lie, cheat, and steal strategy of the Republicans. Yeah. And it seems to be employed in state after state. And DeJoy, Postmaster General, who couldn't even tell you the price of a stamp, is supposed to somehow secure our elections. Okay, let's keep traveling north. Virginia's slow going, but it looks like Virginia's going to be blue. So I'm going to skip over them pretty quick.
We knew that.
Let's get to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, we knew that.
Yeah, I mean, thanks, Tim Kaine. Last year, you dragged it out at 11 o'clock, but here we are. So, and for those listening, this is the Dear Culture podcast, and we're asking Dear Culture, why do we not know who
our president is going to be? Yes.
Right. For better or for worse. So we're now in Pennsylvania, the Keystone State, 20 electoral college votes. Looks like, again, Pennsylvania, because of their Republican legislature, they have not been allowed to count their absentee ballots or their early voting ballots until this evening when polls closed, mm-hmm. right? And that's a strategic choice that was made by the Republican legislature. So unlike other states where they started counting
first thing in the morning, you know, so that they could,
exactly. And now Pennsylvania's like, oh, it's going to take us some time because we have all these absentee ballots. Why do we have absentee ballots? Because we're in the middle of a global pandemic because Donald Trump is a villain, right? So here we are. How is that looking? This is in Joe Biden's backyard. I mean, he easily won Delaware, and he's the son of Scranton, even though the president made it known during the debate that you only lived there till you were 10. I was like, how old are you, sir?
I mean, you know.
Like, what? This is what we're doing. So the Keystone State's a toss-up, right? And you remember, famously in 2000, Pennsylvania went blue. And I remember this because, right, Tom Ridge was one of the only Republican governors that was around. Yes. And when we created the Department of Homeland Security, George Bush chose him as the first head of Homeland Security because he was one of the only old school Republican governors left. Because you remember GW egged him because he didn't deliver Pennsylvania, right?
Yes.
So we know that Pennsylvania has been a swing state in the past. What are you feeling about 2020 in Pennsylvania?
I think Biden probably wins Pennsylvania, but it depends on how the legal things go. I mean, by all accounts, I mean, and you know Pennsylvania, you know the city probably, you know the states probably better than I do. But even from what I've read and from our colleague, Mike Lamont Hill, and seeing some of his tweets about his voting experience, I mean, the turnout appears to be high. Biden has been polling very well there for a long time. And I don't think you can overlook Biden's real improvement. If we look at these changes, right? And again, same day exit polls aren't all that reliable. But Biden has done very well with white college educated people and non-college educated white folks. And you see a lot of that in places like Pennsylvania. Right. I suspect, I mean, you know, Team Biden is doing well there. And the fact that you've got so many votes to count probably augurs well for them. That's why the Republicans are fighting some of these darn lawsuits there. But ultimately, we're not going to know. I don't even think we'll know by Friday. And I will say this. It's very interesting that here we are late at night, the first night. You notice, Dr. Greer, nobody, even Donald Trump, hasn't tried to claim victory yet. Because he can't.
I mean, you can't have seven outstanding states, sir. I mean, I think even the sycophants that surround him are calm down. Like, this can't be a full
right, exactly.
Like, you have been stealing in broad daylight, but like, there is such thing as a bridge too far, right? I mean, everybody knows when you overplay your hand. All right, let's move west just a touch. The great state of Ohio, which for me has been so quiet this electoral season. I feel like we've been talking about Michigan and Wisconsin. We've been talking about Pennsylvania and Georgia. But Ohio has always been a swing state. You know, it surprised us in 2004. It sort of creeps in and creeps out. What are you feeling about Ohio?
See, I don't think Ohio is a swing state. And I lived there for a decade.
Sure
Ohio's
red and let's stop talking about it.
Yeah, it's a red state. And I will tell you this, Dr. Greer, it's really interesting. So I was texting a bunch of my former students in and around there. They're my, you know, very Game of Thrones. They're my little sparrows, right? And
you know,
you know what? Okay. I don't want to hear that violence because you should.
I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. I saw the first 5 minutes and somebody got killed in the forest. And I was like, what is this nonsense?
You have to watch a show about white incest and violence and little people. That's essentially
hard pass.
And dragons.
Hard pass.
And dragons.
I'll watch The Wire or Lovecraft Country. If I want to see dragons, I'll watch Lovecraft Country. Listen, this is how we deviate. Right. I saw the first 5 minutes. Somebody got killed in the woods. And I was like, what is going on?
And golden arms. Okay, so the point is, I figured Ohio was red. Mahoning Valley, which is where Youngstown is. Trump won that county again. I heard from a lot of my students there. It was interesting. I one kid in particular, I texted him this morning, and he texted me back, and he's like, I said, you know, how's it looking? He's like, I voted for a Democrat in a federal election for the first time since 2008. He's like, Professor Johnson, I voted for Biden. You know, I had not voted for a Democrat. He's like, you know, I voted for Romney. I voted for Trump. But this time I voted for Biden. He said his wife, who was 29, voted for the first time in her life. And she voted primarily because of George Floyd. And she was like, oh, wow, I can't like not vote anymore. So this is a Republican couple, you know, of white people in their late 20s, early 30s. So I say that because it was indicative of some shifts. There were some areas where Biden was performing really well in Ohio. But I think Ohio is a red state. I think Ohio and Florida are red states. I don't think they're going to change anytime soon. And because of the voter suppression in both of those places, the changing amount of times you can do early voting or anything else like that, I don't think they're going to change. But you don't have to win Ohio anymore. And that's why we don't talk about it as much, because it's really not as crucial as it used to be winning an election.
As it once was. Yes. Okay, so before we run out of time, let's talk about our good friends, Michigan and Wisconsin. How are you feeling about those two? I mean, we know that the margin was so small in 2016. We know that because of alternative party candidates, Gary Johnson and our other friend, Jill Stein. There we go. I think I just have a mental block on her name.
She's still looking for those mystery votes.
Jill,
the ones that she
can. That's my new t-shirt. Jill, comma, sit down. So I'm feeling that they're blue.
Yeah.
And I feel like if Biden gets Michigan, Wisconsin, I just feel like he needs one battleground state, and that puts him over 271, you know, barring all the other right. states remain blue that have been in the recent past. But as we've laid out, Ohio and Florida, I can pretty much take them off the table. And so it really does come down to sort of North Carolina and Pennsylvania. One of those two he needs to sort of go over the margin, but it doesn't look like Pennsylvania will be delivered anytime soon. And North Carolina, if I'm thinking that North Carolina might be the ticket for Joe Biden, I'm pretty sure someone in the Trump campaign has figured that out too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, so in Michigan, in the Detroit area, they have 2008 turnout numbers. Mm-hmm. I mean, like it's 08 level, so yeah. he's going to take Michigan. And also, like, I don't think you can't underestimate the significance of having Democratic governors of these states, which yeah. means even if
and
they're fighting
each has a black lieutenant governor,
exactly.
a progressive each black lieutenant governor.
Exactly. So these guys are like, we're going to try and make sure that the votes actually count. So I think Wisconsin, which is about to do a huge dump with Milwaukee at, I think they said 3 o'clock a.m. Eastern mm-hmm. Standard Time. I think he's going to win Milwaukee. I think he's going to win Wisconsin. I think he's probably going to win Michigan. I think what's also important for people to remember is like the election don't really start right until some state flips, and as of right now we only have one state that may have flipped, only one. So as of right now we're pretty much just status quo, right?
But I mean, because the only interesting action is Arizona,
and I do think Arizona probably is blue, and I do think the Democrats, you know what, I figured out one thing. You know, if the Democrats want to win the Senate, they should just run Martha McSally in every state, because that
listen.
Woman lost two
when you saw someone wrote, it's like, ooh, you can only spell McSally with two L's. She took two L's. Double law.
How are you?
No, but the thing is, though, but it looks like New Mexico is going to Trump, yes?
No, New Mexico is going to
Biden. Because I was like, it should be blue, and that was the only concern I had. Okay,
New Mexico is going
to Mexico
Biden.
And Arizona and Colorado are blue.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So Hickenlooper's good.
Yeah, so Hickenlooper won in Colorado. Trump was hoping for Nevada, but now they're like, yeah, Nevada's going to Biden. They called New Mexico a couple of hours ago. So Fox News is the first place
Fox
to call
News
Arizona.
Fox News is talking about Disneyland closures and all types of ridiculousness, everything but the damn election.
But
okay? Like, they don't talk about anything but what's going on.
They will use, so, I mean, it's weird because I watched some, you know, I was flipping channels and watched some of their coverage, and they were just very matter of fact about it. Like, they were like, yeah, uh-huh. we just lost Arizona. I also think, as talking about circling back to what we said before, Arizona is also indicative of why we need to be much more specific when we talk about Hispanics and Latino people,
yes.
because the show me your papers law, that Senate bill they passed in Arizona, there's a whole lot of stuff in Arizona that pissed off the Mexican
and Arpaio.
Yes, Arpaio, mm-hmm. Central American, blah, 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 immigrant population that was like, oh no. And that ain't the same as, you know, native Spanish
Cuban,
people.
Cuban, Venezuelan, Argentinian, Miami
yes.
people. Mm-hmm. But I also think that we need to be a little more specific. They can look at generations and class too, because there are quite a few Latinos in Arizona who are not keen on all this immigration, right? We've seen this time and time again with racial and ethnic groups. It's like, well, I've climbed the ladder.
I got here.
I'm more than happy to pull this ladder up, right? And start talking about quote unquote illegal, right? And when we think about undocumented populations and how people integrate into society. Okay, so I think that's almost all the time we have. Mm. Any other state that you are interested in, or any other race that is tickling your fancy? We see the squad is handily reelected. It looks like Cori Bush from Missouri is going in. So an activist from the Ferguson days, and is now a black woman from the state of Missouri going to Congress.
And replacing Lacey Clay, which is great because I don't think he was doing a particularly good job. The thing I'm actually paying attention to is, even if Joe Biden doesn't end up winning the state of Texas, they only need to flip 6 seats in their state legislature in order for Democrats to take control of state legislature in Texas. And that's huge. Huge, because with redistricting happening next year, I mean, if the state legislator flips blue in Texas, Texas is a blue state by 2024 because they'll
Texas
rewrite these
flip.
Districts.
Right. And this is what we have to remember, you know, listeners, this is a census year. Even though the census was cut short, thanks to your president and his administration, this is a census year. So state legislatures across the country in all 50 states will be redrawing the maps, and they'll be deciding whether or not they want to pack all the Democrats into one or two districts, or they want to crack them up into various districts and dilute their political power. So it does matter who's controlling your state house and how they're going to draw those lines, because we'll live under these lines for the next 10 years. And if you ever want to Google gerrymandering, you will see some of the most obscure districts.
They're
all contiguous.
Like
they're all touching one another. And it goes, I have a TED Ed video. If you Google Christina Greer gerrymandering, you can see the history of gerrymandering, why it looked like a salamander. But, you know, the district in North Carolina that essentially stretches across the entire state and picks up all the black people in one district, right? South Carolina, 7 congressional districts for many, many years. They only had one Democratic district, that was Clyburn.
Right.
Now they have 2 out of 7, but it was very explicit and specific to make sure they packed all the black folks into one district. You know, that earmuff district in Illinois with captures all the Latinos around two highways. I mean, the list goes on and on. Okay, so Jason Johnson, I love spending lunch tonight with you. Listeners, thank you so much for tapping into Dear Culture Podcast and answering our question, why don't we have a president at the end of Election Day? But stay tuned. This pop-up podcast will be with you at least for another week after this launches, and hopefully we'll have some results.
We'll have a president, and we'll have a nominal degree of freedom so we don't all have to leave the country.
Right, and then we can talk a little bit more about the first Monday after the second Wednesday, which is December 14th this year, where the electors will actually go to their various state houses and pledge their electoral votes for the candidate who is the president-elect. And then we'll move on to January 20th. So all the policy
nerd stuff. Yay.
Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Christina Griot with my co-host here, Jason Johnson. You are listening to The Griot's Dear Culture Podcast. Be well, wear a mask, and thank you for voting.
Of course, we want to remind our listeners to please support your local Black businesses and donate to your religious institutions and local organizations. The business that we will be highlighting this week is Ember Niche Eyewear, offering high quality eyeglasses inspired by Black art, music, history, and experience. Ember Niche is devoted to establishing a brand that fosters individuality, creativity, and fearlessness. You can visit them on emberniche.com. That's EmberNiche.com. If you didn't know, Griot has published a list of 50 plus Black businesses to support during the coronavirus pandemic. If you'd like to your business to be featured, email us at info@thegriot.com. That's thegriot.com.
Thank you for listening to Dear Culture. If you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star review and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast and share it with everyone you know.
And of course, please email us all questions, suggestions, and compliments. We love those, to podcast@thegriot.com. And of course, the Dear Culture podcast is brought to you by The Griot and executive produced by Blue Talusma and co-produced by Sunda Sasan, Kyrie Williams, and Kevin Y. Brown.